Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Skip Button, a podcast all about the music you love to hate. I'm your host, Ben Barzilai. This past March marked the 20th anniversary of Drops of Jupiter, the super smash hit from the band Train. Since 1998, Train, led by singer-songwriter Patrick Monahan, has been a mainstay on radio and Billboard charts for decades now, selling over 10 million albums and 30 million tracks worldwide. Tracks like Drops of Jupiter, as well as Meet Virginia, Calling All Angels, Hey Soul Sister, and Drive By. Through it all, the band has been a constant source of animosity for people who think that their music is safe and that their lyrics are cringy, lazy, and hokey. As per usual, the question I'm asking today is, how is it that a band that's been that successful for that long gets that much hate? Pat Monahan is a musician from Erie, Pennsylvania, who, to quote his wiki page, following the dissolution of his Led Zeppelin cover band, settled in California and formed the band Train. Train debuted with their eponymous album in 1998. If you happen to know any song off that album, it's probably Meet Virginia. With Meet Virginia peaking at number 20 on the Billboard Hot 100, the album Train solidified the group as a legitimate roots rock band with mainstream potential.
I remember with the first album, critics liked them okay. You know, they didn't hate them. I don't think that they loved them, but they didn't hate them the way they do now.
That's Colin McGuire.
Hi, I'm Colin McGuire from Pop Matters.
Colin McGuire is a music critic from Pop Matters and wrote a great article called In Defense of Train, Not Being as Bad as You Think. It was in response to them having released their 2012 album, California 37. What was your, well, before that album and before you started writing that article, what was your relationship with Train?
It was a good one. It was a good relationship. I've been, and I've written this on a bunch of platforms. I've been a fan of Train. It makes me lose credibility from everybody around me, but I will not shy away from that.
McGuire is one of the few notable music critics I've found who is actually a longtime fan of Train, so he was an amazing person to talk to about their early work and how it was received critically.
I heard Train for the first time because I was one of those kids who would videotape 120 minutes. So 120 minutes, it was on Sunday nights, and it was all this alt rock. It was like the first time you heard Radiohead was on it. That was MTV's cool show. And the first time I saw the video for Meet Virginia was on 120 minutes.
Interesting.
So that pretty much tells you the roller coaster that Train has been on. At that point, they were deemed cool enough to be on a show like that.
However, Train's biggest breakout moment didn't come from their debut album. It came 3 years later when they released the lead single from their second album. The album and that single share the same name, Drops of Jupiter.
That she's back in the atmosphere with drops of Jupiter in her head.
Drops of Jupiter was an inescapable song. It hit the top five of the Billboard Hot 100 chart, went platinum 6 times, and was nominated for 5 Grammy Awards, taking home 2. By the way, you guys should definitely check out Entertainment Weekly's article celebrating the song's 20th anniversary. It's called Soy Lattes and the Literal Dream Song, an oral history of Train's Drops of Jupiter, written by Sydney Buxbaum. Maybe it's because it reminds me so much of my childhood, but I really love this song. It's a great distillation of all things Train. It's catchy, it's grandiose, it's quirky and romantic, even if a little kitschy. However, I can definitely appreciate that the more it was played on the radio, which was a lot, the more bones people had to pick with it. More specifically, the song has one of the most polarizing lyrics in pop music history. The best soy latte that you ever had and me. The best soy latte that you ever had and me. Starting with Drops of Jupiter, Train became known for these sort of slice-of-life, uber-specific lyrics that some people find kind of cringy.
Pat Monahan is a very odd lyric writer. Now, you can either look at that as an attribute that works in his favor or against him. I think to all the cool kids, it works against him. To anybody else, they think it's kind of quirky and funny and fun. I mean, just look at Drops of Jupiter, you know, Soy Latte, things like that.
Right.
Like, there are so many references in just that song that people kind of shake their head at, like, what the hell is this? At some point, that became really, really annoying to all the cool kids, to all the critics, to all of everybody around them. And they're just like, this guy's just, this is corny.
Part of me wonders if Train would have gotten away with lyrics like Best Soy Latte if the song wasn't played so many damn times. I think because of how much it was overplayed, people really started to take umbrage with how on the nose the lyrics were. And it made it so that anytime Train came out with a new song, listeners were kind of on high alert, ready to dismiss any of their hokey lyricism. After Train's second album turned them into rock stars, they released the album My Private Nation, which was clearly meant to replicate the success of Drops of Jupiter. Even though the album wasn't a success in that regard, it did produce what I think are some of their better songs, including Calling All Angels. And yet, by this point, Train had already become a band that you weren't allowed to like if you wanted to be considered cool.
But, you know, you mentioned that you lose credibility talking about Train. And I have to say, the article that you wrote, I mean, the first, like, four paragraphs are, like, buffer paragraphs trying to cushion the blow of you being like, I like Train. I mean, that's... that's what so much of my show is just me trying to, like, ease people into the idea of, like... suggesting that maybe this is an artist with something to offer. So I could relate to that. But what was, at least at the time, like the perception of Train that you felt like, all right, let me really like ease people into this idea?
Well, at the time, they had Meet Virginia and then they had Drops of Jupiter, but then they had some failures after that. There's a record, I think it's their fourth record. It's called For Me, It's You. Or For You, It's Me.
For Me, It's You.
It's one of those two. And it's utterly ignored. And whenever you see them live, I'm surprised it's even on their Wikipedia page. They didn't have them take it down. They seem to be embarrassed by the record.
He's right. That fourth album seems to be virtually non-existent. There are no lasting singles, and I can't find any critical coverage of that album. For Me, It's You is sort of this weird dead zone in their discography, and the only reason I can think of is that it's just really not that good of an album. Granted, there are a few albums that I think are quote-unquote great Train albums, but this one in particular just doesn't have any standouts. It kind of seemed like Train's fate was going to be similar to that of so many rock bands of their generation. A breakout single, an arena tour, a couple flops, and then a slow fade out from mainstream consciousness. And to be honest, if that's what had happened, I don't think it would have been anything to be embarrassed about. They made four albums over the course of 8 years, climbed the Billboard charts, earned some Grammys, sold out some stadiums. It would have been totally normal and commendable for a rock band of their generation to end it there. But then, 3 years later in 2009, the nation stood at attention to the sound of a ukulele pouring out of their car speakers. Hey, 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 hey. For the first time in 8 years, Train reached the top five of the Billboard Hot 100 with their song, Hey Soul Sister. And people lost their damn minds.
They were going by the wayside. All of a sudden, Hey Soul Sister happened, and all of a sudden, people were reminded, oh yeah, these guys. I don't know if I like these guys. And then that was everywhere. I mean, it was in commercials. That ukulele riff was so popular.
With Hey Soul Sister, Train basically refreshed their whole career, returning as a mainstay on radio and the Billboard Hot 100. The song was a single off of their fifth and arguably most successful album, Save Me San Francisco, which included other songs like If It's Love. While everybody else is getting out of bed, I'm usually getting in it. I'm not in it. And Marry Me. But Hey Soul Sister was definitely the album's crowning commercial achievement. It's the band's highest charting song of all time. It's also the song that everyone points to as the song that proves that Train is a bad band. Kind of like Drops of Jupiter, I think a small part of it had to do with how incessantly it was played everywhere you seem to go.
Like, it is extremely catchy. I have it stuck in my head right now.
Fuck you, Ben, by the way, for that. Just kidding.
Imagine what it's like to host this show.
Yeah, I mean,
that's me talking to Mark and Sarah.
Hello, I'm Mark Blankenship, critic, journalist, podcaster, and all-around music nerd.
And I'm Sarah D. Bunting. All of those things and less.
Mark and Sarah host a podcast that I think everyone should check out called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. One of the songs they talk about is Hey Soul Sister.
So the way that I got in touch with you guys was sort of roundabout, because every start of a new episode that I do starts with me Googling why do people hate, and then whatever the topic of my episode is, it's a very, very nuanced research process that I have.
Yes.
And so I initially found, Mark, your article about Train that you wrote like a decade ago for New Now Next.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then through that, I found your podcast where you had a couple years later also talked about Train. So, Mark, I want to start by asking you, do you remember like what your opinion of Train was then, and if it changed once you did the episode, and has it changed again since then?
My opinion of Train, which apparently I am professionally obliged to re-air every 5 or 6 years, pretty much got cemented when I saw them performing on the campus of Stanford University in 1998. So my opinion of Train hasn't changed in nigh on 25 years at this point, because they were a band that at the time was just a Bay Area band and weren't famous yet, but when I saw them, I thought, wow, this music is pretty catchy, but if I listen to anything the singer is saying, I think I hate it. And that has been the push-pull of my relationship to this band ever since.
When it comes to hating Train, this is usually what the hate boils down to, their lyrics. When I sent out feelers on Twitter and Instagram for what my next episode should be about, I was kind of surprised by how many people reached out saying that it had to be Train. And most of the conversations I had with people were about how they just can't stand the way that Pat Monahan writes. One of the people who were most adamant about this was one of my best friends from college, Colin.
How's it going?
Good. You caught me in the middle of just pulling dumb Train lyrics.
Yes, there are two Collins on this episode. Yes, they're both different Collins than the one that was on my Phil Collins episode. Yes, I let way too many white men on my show. While I try to work on that, I'm hoping it'll be easy enough to tell which Colin is which. If it helps, one of them spells it with one L, but I don't think that matters on a podcast. This is my college friend Colin talking.
I think they came up in what I like to call when indie was going through its specific nonsense phase. Like, if you listen to like a Bare Naked Ladies song, like it's just specific nonsense.
Right.
It's like all everyone's trying to make We Didn't Start the Fire.
Exactly. Or like you have like a Counting Crows track where like he's just like, you're just saying like random stuff. Like, so I think that Train took that and we're like, oh, we want to go more mainstream with it, so we're going to drop it in because it's interesting, but like it has no significance. Like, the interesting thing about it is that it's like, oh, I drink soy lattes. It's not like they're making some sort of comment on soy lattes or like why soy lattes mean something.
The more Colin, my college friend Colin, and I did a deep dive on Train, the more their music lost its shiny veneer to me. As I pointed out to Mark and Sarah, this reminded me of another episode that I did.
I did an episode on Black Eyed Peas a couple months ago.
Oh, and, my.
And what I said about them, especially their mid-2000s music, is that it sounds good, but it isn't. Like, as soon as you like interrogate it or poke at it a little bit, you realize that this is nonsense. And yeah. I think Train is very similar in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to our episode, which in case anyone is interested, it is episode 61 of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. I think where I came out on Train, I mean, my process with it was I knew Mark hated it and hated this song in particular, but I had conflated Train and Korn. So, like, initially they started up because they weren't fucking Korn. And then they just lost all of that like secondary non-bad will. So as I said when we talked about it 4 years ago, like, it just seems designed to get bought and put over the kind of commercial that you see during live sports 70 times and you want to just dive out of a window. And also the lyric, "I'm so thug," is a war crime. I have called the police and the Hague. "I'm so thug. I'm so mad. I'm so mad." Still.
This is actually reconnecting me to my train-based rage. And Ben, your comment about the Black Eyed Peas actually helped me clarify something, because the Black Eyed Peas, that music from the mid-aughts isn't good, but it also is good to me because it at least no one in the Black Eyed Peas is fronting like that music means anything. Right. You know, "Meet Me Halfway" is a good song that just exists to be played when I'm on the elliptical machine. They specifically engineered "I Got a Feeling" so that people would play it at birthday parties, weddings, and bar and bat mitzvahs. I mean, they
and
say
the seventh inning stretch. Yes, yeah. Fine. Bad
and
races.
That is fine. Like it is what it presents itself to be, which is dumb party music. Train has the audacity to make equally stupid music and then front like it belongs in that thoughtful singer-songwriter camp where the words mean things.
Okay, so I want to stop there for a second, because this is something that has come up a lot in my back and forths about Train. This idea that Train's lyrics are doubly stupid because they're meant to be taken seriously. But are they? Colin, not my college friend Colin, but the one who writes for Pop Matters, talks about this in his article, quote, "Train have never argued that they've been trying to reinvent the wheel with their music, nor have they ever really claimed to be anything other than what they are, which is a simple pop rock group that is quite aware of how lucky they are, that they were not only afforded one jolt into hit-making, nobody can get away from it song stratosphere with Drops of Jupiter, but they also managed to somehow produce a victory lap with 2009's Hey Soul Sister," end quote.
Pat Monahan had his own podcast for maybe a year or two. This was within the last 10 years. He started his own podcast, and some of it was a little cringeworthy. Some of it's like, just don't say that. But there were some moments, though, where I do think he was very, very reflective and honest about where he understands Train is in terms of the popular culture lexicon. He understands that. He gets it. It took him a long time to accept it. You get that sense, at least, that it took him a while to come to terms with it, to be at peace with it. Mm-hmm. But he's at peace with it now. He talked about, we're never going to be asked to play Saturday Night Live. That's never going to happen. There's a self-awareness to that I feel overrides a lot of the reasons why people want to dismiss them. I think that there are people who really value that. I'm one of them. I really value that in somebody. It's what they can do best, you know? Like, it's not, they're not trying to do anything else. They're trying to do the best at what they do best, with the exception of that dumb Led Zeppelin album.
Oh yeah, by the way, I had no idea about this, but in 2016, in a sort of full circle moment in Pat Monahan's career, Train released a Led Zeppelin cover album. As someone who can't really claim a deep appreciation of Led Zeppelin, I actually thought it was kind of solid, if not completely unnecessary. But I know I got one thing I got to do. But I digress. What is it about Train's music that makes us think that they're more self-serious than someone like Black Eyed Peas? Because to me, Pat Monahan seems way less into himself than Will.i.am. When I started working on this episode, this question was particularly interesting to me because at the time, another band leader had gone viral for his take on, quote, serious musicianship. I'm talking, of course, about Adam Levine, lead singer of the often requested skip button topic, Maroon 5. Adam Levine recently went viral when he said that he's lamenting the fact that bands don't exist anymore. And as I was kind of starting my deep dive on Train, I wondered how much of the critical bias against them is because they're a band and they shoulder the expectations that come with that label of being a band. And I wonder, you know, versus if the music was being made by like Ed Sheeran or something like that, who doesn't sort of have all the biases and expectations that come with being a band, if there's some sort of inherent like obstacle that they have to climb in order to gain any credibility because people think of them as a band.
So this is a really interesting point, because I think I'm so glad you said that, because this is something I wanted to make sure we got in somehow, and you just facilitated that. Train, after California 37, ceased to be a band. Everybody was out. The project is just Pat Monahan. That's all it is. And it's him and it's Jerry. Jerry is their musical director when they tour. And they sort of write all the songs now, just the two of them. And then the people who are still in the band, even Jimmy, who was the ball guitar player, who was kind of synonymous with the band, he's gone too. So at that point, it just became the Pat Monahan show. Hmm. But to your point, the thing with him is, Pat Monahan put out a solo album right around the time that record I referenced earlier came out and flopped and nobody cared.
Yeah, so Pat Monahan released a solo album in 2007 called The Last of Seven, which I think is in reference to the seven people who had been in Train. That's kind of a guess. The album is nothing exciting. The most notable thing about it is that there's a song that features Brandi Carlile that's still somehow not all that compelling.
She's a gypsy, he's a pirate on the run. Her eyes, they know too much.
He put it out, that flopped even worse. Nobody even knew the name Pat Monahan. They just knew Train. It's at this point, I think Pat's just using the Train name as a brand, because they will listen to Train. They will not listen to Pat Monahan. So then you get into that discussion of, well, is this a rock band? Is it just a pop act? I think it was. It was definitely started as a rock band, and it was for a lot of years. But I think for maybe at least the last two albums, I'd say, maybe the last 5 to 10 years, that's not a band. They're just not. I mean, what drew me to the band and the reason why, I mean, a reason why I have such a connection with them is Scott Underwood.
Scott Underwood, the drummer for Train.
I play the drums, and Scott Underwood to me is the quintessential pop rock drummer. I love his groove. I've stolen riffs from him. That's gone now. Like, it's gone. Even Jimmy's gone. I don't know that they are a band.
And maybe that's what makes songs like Hey Soul Sister feel so disingenuous. It's by an act that can't seem to figure out if they're a band or a solo project, a rock or a pop act. And whenever an artist teeters between pop and another genre, people are always going to find their music sellout-y or shallow.
In everything I've read about Train, they, like, every move they made was very much about, like, how do we become a stadium rock band? Like, how do we sell out 40,000 seat arenas, which is admirable. And, like, if that's your hustle, that's your hustle. But I don't think they ever put an album together that blew anybody.
And no Train song felt more like a lazy ploy for success than Hey Soul Sister. It is an infuriatingly catchy song that, as my college friend put it, has specific nonsense lyrics that sounds like it should really be about something, but it's just nonsense. Oh, and it's even more nonsensical considering what inspired the song.
Did you read his explanation for it?
Yes, okay. There are a lot of, like, Pat Monahan explaining his lyrics things where I think, okay, that's charming, I get it, blah, blah, blah. This was an example of a thing that made me more upset. Of like, what? That's your explanation? Do you want to explain?
I also think he's lying. So his quote, because I pulled the quote. His quote is, I wrote it with some friends in New York, and I had never been to Burning Man, but everyone around me was going to Burning Man, and that song made me think of my wife dancing around this Burning Man. So the whole song was about Burning Man. And then we shot a video that had nothing to do with it. Okay, Pat, if that song's about Burning Man, you wouldn't say the words Burning Man 12 times in that sentence.
No, but okay, I think this is a really important distinction. The song isn't the song isn't about Burning Man. The song is him guessing what Burning Man is like.
And then there's a follow-up question where they're like, oh, have you gone to Burning Man since? And he's like, nah, the kids are too young, so we're waiting to take them. And I'm like, you went to your kids to Burning Man, Pat? That's what you think is a family bonding experience? So you have no idea what Burning Man is.
You have no idea. He heard one thing about Burning Man and just, like, filled in all the blanks. But, yeah.
The lyrics
don't match up at all.
Yeah.
I think it's about him dating a black woman.
Okay, thank you. And okay, I want you to elaborate, but I want you to know that I think this too, and I can't find a single thought piece that seems to agree with me.
I know. The one thing I read, one thing, it was on some forum, and someone was like, is this about a black woman? And everyone was like, I don't think so. And then other people were like, no, it's definitely about a black woman. And other people were like, well, he didn't say it was about a black woman. Because first of all, he writes this song in, when does it come out?
This was like 2009.
So we all know what Soul Sister is in 2009. We all know. We've lived, societally, we've lived through the 60s and 70s. We know what Soul Sister indicates.
Okay, I won't bore you with our whole conspiracy theory about how Hey Soul Sister is racist, although it can basically be summed up by saying,
I'm so thug. I'm so mad. I'm so mad.
I am curious if people think that I'm just making it up, but regardless, I think it brings up a point about Train's brand of lyricism. Whether or not there's something actively racist about Hey Soul Sister, at the very least, Train was too lazy to ask themselves if it was racist. In fact, the idea that Train is lazy came up a lot in my chat with Mark and Sarah.
I think actually, this band and Patrick Monahan are like smarter than they're letting on, and they could actually like clean up these lyrics and do another draft, but they just don't.
Right.
And as a result, here I am for yet another time providing an exegetical analysis of this thing that he wrote while he was taking a crap.
Right. That actually brings me to a song of theirs that I want to make sure that I acknowledge, which is a song called Bruises that they recorded with the country music semi-star. She should be a superstar, but she's not. Ashley Monroe. This is the song, the one trans song I've ever heard that lyrically is actually good. And I think it almost makes it worse. Like you were just saying, Sarah, like if they were able to do this once, they could have done it more than once.
Yeah.
And I'm almost actually angry that I know that they had a song like Bruises in them, because I mean, I'm not going to say that these lyrics are going to win the Nobel Prize, but they're like good lyrics, right? They're good pop lyrics. And the fact that they were able to do that once, and yet they decided to go with Untrimmed Chest, really just, it deflates the balloon of my soul.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you on this.
I mean, I would say we're not mad, we're just disappointed, but we're mad. I'm mad and disappointed.
Yeah, that's right.
So obsessed, my heart.
As Colin, my college friend, pointed out, when you write lyrics that are both that dense and that thoughtless, you run the risk of saying things you really shouldn't say.
Train, to me, just writes these songs that are like supposedly like romantic. Like they write a lot of like based on like relationships, based on like losing lovers a lot of the time.
Right.
But it's so toxic. Meet Virginia, right? They came out with like that's like the big hit off of their first album, Meet Virginia. It's cute. It's a cute song. And it's one of their first songs that I personally fell in love with. But the whole song is just about like, oh, she's not like the other girls and she doesn't really know what she wants. And like, that's such like a bad take. And it's like, oh, I love this girl and she loves me, but like, she doesn't know what she wants. And I can see that, but she can't. Like, which is like so bad, which is just like, oh, women don't know what they want. They're all confused. They're all emotion. And like, I just get to sit here and look at them.
Cool. Okay. So I don't know about you, but my first instinct to what Colin, my college friend, said was that he was kind of overanalyzing it. But then I started to have this back and forth in my head. Is he overanalyzing it? Would this be an overanalysis if, say, Radiohead had made these lyrics? Is it fair to compare a band like Train to a band like Radiohead? Aren't they doing different things? Does that matter?
It was a lot, and it's a back and forth similar to the one that I had about Mumford & Sons. On that episode, I talked about how there are two different kinds of music listeners, the kind that engage on a granularly critical level with the music that they listen to, and the kind that are simply chasing a certain feeling or sensation and aren't concerned with the rest. On Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, Sarah summarized this concept in a way that I kind of liked.
Sarah, also in the episode that you guys did on Drain, I really appreciated the tomato radish analogy that you had. And I've found myself thinking a lot about it since I first heard you say it. Do you mind like expounding that a little bit?
Well, I think I started out by saying that it was a grand unifying theory of pop music and salad ingredients. It is neither grand nor unifying, much like Train lyrics. So at least we're sort of on topic, but I was comparing Train to, say, Everclear, which I think is like basically a very similar band in like tone and output.
You would listen to the music on the AM radio. Yeah, you could hear the music on the AM radio.
But I think my point is that like in a salad, like tomato, I don't think I understand why people don't like tomatoes, but people who don't like tomatoes really don't like tomatoes. It's like a texture issue, but I'm sort of like, well, but I mean, they don't have a ton of taste and they're mostly water. And, you know, what's so inoffensive about tomatoes? And I think Everclear is a tomato, but Train is a radish because radishes have a very similar effect on me that tomatoes have on those who don't like them, which is like, it seems like it's a relatively bland vegetable, but there's like a little aggressive, bitter zest to it that I feel is hidden. And so even though it's bland, it's like aggressively so, it's like combative filler ingredient, and that's Train. That it's like, you know, it doesn't have much taste, and the kind of taste that it has, I should like, but it's like so vague, but also aggro at the same time.
Right.
I mean, the metaphor does not hold up, but I don't really like radishes and I don't really like Train, so we're just going to go with it.
No, but what I liked about it is that like there is a level of subjectivity to it where like there are people who like the very things that like we can't stand about Train are for some people exactly what they're looking for in their music.
Sure.
They're looking for something that's easily digestible, that's like not trying too hard, something that they can like, that will like put a smile on their face and not make them think too critically.
Yeah.
That's Train. And yeah. That's what a radish is. And
yeah.
Sometimes people really like radishes.
Well, and if you put enough ranch dressing on it, yeah, you can choke it down. This is where, the metaphor fell apart immediately.
Yeah, what's really the ranch in that metaphor?
Okay, so it's not the neatest metaphor in the world, but my point is, I do think that there are things that Train does that if you think of them as a tomato, it's passable and innocuous. But if you think of them as a radish, they're disgusting. Colin, not my college friend, but the one who writes for Pop Matters, clearly thinks of them as a tomato, although he used a different metaphor.
It's like, you know, you come home, there are some nights you come home and you want to watch The Wire because that's your favorite show of all time and it's the smartest show of all time and blah, blah, blah. But then there are times you come home and you just say, I want to watch The Bachelor. And when you watch The Bachelor, it's great. It fits whatever you need at that time. And I think Train is that band, and people will not get past their hatred for them to get there.
Yeah, people don't want to spend critical energy on comfort music.
That's the perfect way to sum it up. People don't want to spend critical energy on comfort music. At the same time, you could critically look at any of this stuff and find things to value. I don't think it's all nonsense. I really don't.
When we try to think of songs that captured all the things that make Train a tomato or a good episode of The Bachelor, we both reference the same song. You Can Finally Meet My Mom.
Don't cry when I die. When it's my time, I probably won't die. I'll just lie down and close my eyes and think about stuff.
This is a song off of California 37, Train's 2012 follow-up to Save Me San Francisco, and the album that Colin from Pop Matters wrote about. The song has so many of Train's signatures. It's catchy, it's folksy, it's filled to the brim with cultural references. But unlike Hey Soul Sister, these ingredients come together to make something that I actually think is pretty good. In this song, Patrick Monahan talks about death and thinks about all the people that he'll get to meet when he gets to heaven, but eventually resolves that the only people he's gonna wanna spend time with are his loved ones. 'Cause I'll be hanging out with you. The title is in reference to the fact that Pat Monahan's mom passed away before he ever became famous, or before his now wife ever met her. He says that the silver lining of him and his wife passing away is that he'd finally be able to introduce her to his mom. I should say, I have a particular relationship with this song and this album. I explained it to Colin from Pop Matters. When California 37 came out, I was interning at a music club. I was basically like their in-house roadie. And Train had basically bought the venue to like videotape a concert and, you know, publish that video. And so I was...
Was that released on DVD?
I honestly have no idea. That was like such a blur of a day for me because I was just like running all over the city trying to get like amps and stuff. I have no idea where that lives now. I think it aired on PBS. It was at the Iridium in Times Square, but it was literally them running through California 37 from beginning to end. And then they performed Drops of Jupiter as an encore. And I had not heard that album at that time. And Iridium is like a very small club. It seats about 100 people. And Train had obviously been touring arenas, you know, for however long. And so I didn't really know what to expect, and I really enjoyed watching them play. And they sound checked and everything, so I basically saw the concert like three times in a row that one day. And they like knew how to play to a small crowd, and they sounded really good. And there were songs on there that I was like, wow, I would listen to this. Like When the Fog Rolls In, I think is an amazing closing track.
Driving over the bridge. To give you my keys. I know you don't love me. I know it ain't easy. Friends become lovers and lovers lose friends. It's when the fog rolls in.
Ooh. But in the song You Can Finally Meet My Mom, when he performed that song, he like spent some time talking to the audience about what it was about. And you could tell that it was really, really personal and sincere to him. About, because, you know, he lost his mom before he ever became famous. And this idea of, like, I remember it so vividly of him being, like, him talking to his wife about, you know, them passing. And he was like, that's going to be so great that you can finally meet this woman that I've talked to. It was, like, really sincere. And then that was, of course, the first time I listened to that song was them performing it live. And all of the things that, for some people, made it corny. For me, it just made it more honest.
I was gonna use that word too. They come by everything they do honestly. I really think that.
Maybe it's because I was so pleasantly surprised by Train's live concert, but I think California 37 is maybe their best album. It has some of their best songs. Songs like You Can Finally Meet My Mom, Bruises, and When the Fog Rolls In. Unfortunately, the singles off of that album are some of their most annoying songs. Songs like 50 Ways to Say Goodbye.
That's cool, but if my friends ask where you are, I'm gonna say. She went down in an airplane, flying, getting suntan, fell in a cement mixer full of quicksand. Help me, help me, I'm no good at goodbye.
And Drive By. I actually hated all the singles because Drive By, I think, is super annoying too.
It's also contradictory. The whole chorus is about how it's not a drive by, and then the rest of the song is about how, like, oh, I slept with this girl once and kind of just left her behind.
Yeah.
So the chorus is a lie? Is that what we're saying?
Well, he's saying that you're the exception, but it's a bad song.
Once again, these songs were so catchy, so annoying, and so hard to escape. They were so successful, and you heard them everywhere, and I don't blame people who just wanted it to stop. But the album that they were meant to promote, I think is pretty good. Since California 37, Train has released two more albums, not including the Led Zeppelin one. Those albums are Bulletproof Picasso and A Girl, A Bottle, A Boat, which has to be one of the dumbest album titles of all time. The only way that I can describe these two albums is that it's Train back on their bullshit. The stupidity of these songs is only rivaled by their catchiness. 2017's A Girl, A Bottle, A Boat has a song that perhaps makes the strongest case for people who think that Train deserves as much flack as they get. Play That Song, a song that aptly interpolates one of the most catchy and annoying songs of 20th century music, Heart and Soul. Play that song, the one that makes me go all night long. As I rounded out my deep dive into Train's discography with these two albums, I found myself really fatigued, even more so than I usually do with this process, which is strange because I don't think that this is the worst music I've had to listen to for the skip button. And that led me to another common theory that has come up on the show. Here's me talking to Colin.
One thing that comes up a lot on this
show... Sorry, Colin from Pop Matters.
One thing that comes up a lot on this show is this idea of critics... Well, people in general, but critics especially, I feel would rather have a band just totally crap out the way that, say, like Greta Van Fleet did, than have a band be like middling. And, you know, we've talked about it with people like Coldplay and people like, you know, Phil Collins, where it's not that they ever did anything gloriously bad. It was that it felt middling. And I had a critic explain to me, like, middling bands make our job really hard because bad bands are, that review's easy. Great bands, that review's easy. Meh bands, that's a review that you're like, oh God, what am I, I don't even know what to say about it. Because it's not like they're doing anything horribly wrong, it's just not interesting. And that's sort of the sense that I get with Train, is that they fall in that category as well of like, it's not that there's anything like offensively bad or anything like amazingly noteworthy. And that's why I hate them, is because I just don't know what to say about them. So like, as a music critic, can you like empathize with that at all?
Most definitely, yeah. Boy, there's a lot to unpack there. The thing about music criticism, and I've talked about this with some other people I know who review records and have reviewed records, is you don't want to get to a point where you listen to an album so much that you start to like it. You have to think at a base level, what is a music critic? A music critic is somebody who loves listening to music. You just love music. When you get a whole new album, you say, well, what can I listen to about this album? What sticks out to me? What's good? Maybe the bass isn't that good. Maybe the lyrics are kind of weird. Maybe the melodies aren't, you know, it goes on and on. But eventually, if you start listening to that record enough, you're going to start to like it because you like music. That's why you're doing it in the first place. And the thing with Train, when it relates back to that, they're one of the easy ones to just say, because they're middling, just forget it. Just forget it, man. Like, that's, they're going to do what they're going to do. Great. You had another semi-hit. Cool. And I think that's a very tunnel vision, very snobby way to look at approaching something like this, because these middling bands do offer so much. I mean,
not only is Colin absolutely right, but it got me thinking a lot about what I do on this show. All I do here is listen to supposedly bad music until I can see the merit in it, until the reasons people dismiss the music become entangled with the reasons that I enjoy it, until the radish becomes a tomato. Sometimes that takes me longer with some music than it does others, but it usually does happen for me. And I'm not the only one. Colin, my college friend, spent an hour bashing this band. But when I asked him one of my favorite questions, his answer really surprised me.
Wait, so what would it take for me to drag you to a Train concert?
What would it take you? Well, I think if the lineup was like Train and like Hootie and the Blowfish and like just like a throwback kind of concert, right? Like, I think if it was like one of those concerts and like tickets were like under $75.
Okay. That was easier than I thought it was going to be, actually.
Well, like, I think it goes back to like, it's good music. I know all the words to a lot of these songs,
right,
inadvertently. And like, it's music written for me. Yeah. I grew up in rural New Hampshire with, like, it's music written for me. Pat Monahan's from Erie, Pennsylvania. He got bored and moved to San Francisco and started this band. Like, it's music written for me.
That's your dream life.
Without the band. Right.
Over two decades have passed since Train became a household name. And I think that as more time goes by, even some of their biggest detractors will think about this Led Zeppelin superfan from a small Pennsylvania city who moved across the country, started a band, and went on to sell 30 million tracks worldwide. And they'll find something to appreciate in his stupid, cringy, ridiculously catchy lyrics. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Skip Button. I hope you enjoyed it. Special thanks to everyone who helped me put this together, including and especially Colin McGuire from Pop Matters, Colin, my college friend, and Mark Blankenship and Sarah DeBunting. Check out more of Colin McGuire's writing at Pop Matters. He also would like to hear from anyone who might be able to connect him to Train for an interview, as, by the way, would I. Go check out Mark and Sarah's podcast, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, as well as their recent book about Madonna called Madonna A to Z. You should also check out their Patreon, where they host weekly happy hours to talk about all things music. You can find all of that on their website, markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. Colin, my college friend, would like to plug Planned Parenthood and hopes that everyone donates to them. Also check out Red Hen Press, an indie publishing house that publishes some amazing books. I'll have a link to all of these plugs in the podcast description. As always, follow me on Instagram at SkipButtonPodcast or on Twitter at BarsNearMe, bars with a Z. Check out all episodes of The Skip Button and more at theskipbutton.com. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on some of the questions that I asked during this episode. Where do you stand on the Best Soy Latte lyric? Do you buy that Hey Soul Sister might be about a black woman? Do you think Train is self-serious or self-aware? Oh, also, what would you rather listen to, Train's Led Zeppelin cover album or Greta Van Fleet's new album? Also, I'd love to know if there are any pop music journalists of color that you guys think should be on my radar. DM me your answers to any of these or email me at ben@theskipbutton.com. I'm also toying with the idea of starting a Patreon. It could be maybe a place where people can contribute their thoughts to an episode or listen to full-length conversations that I have for the show or maybe vote on what the next episode will be about. Those are just some thoughts, but let me know if that's the kind of thing that you might be willing to spend a couple bucks a month on, and I would be happy to put that together. Until then, thanks again for listening, and I will see you next time on The Skip Button. Bye, guys!